Welcome to The Pet Perspective. I'm joined today by Dr. Sarah Ellis, who is co-author of the book, The Trainable Cat. She is going to be giving us a deep dive into the wonderful world of cat behavior, including the difference between a meow and a yowl, the many ways cats try to communicate with us, how to spot a happy cat versus a sad cat, and what we need to do to be the best cat parents possible. She might also give us some cat training tips. Hi, Sarah, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for inviting me.
I'm really excited to hear all about the wonderful world of cat behavior. We've been a bit dog heavy in our previous episode, so it's exciting to be able to give something to our cat parents out there. And you are the person to speak to. Thank you for joining us. So a study recently suggested that only about 40% of cat owners know what their cat is trying to say when it meows, or say that they know. So is it possible to tell what a cat means when it's meowing? Are there different kinds of meows that we should be aware of?
That's a really interesting question. And actually, that research is interesting in itself, because many years ago, I would have said, really? I definitely know what my cats mean by their meows. They meow at me all the time, and I know them so well, I could tell you what those different meows mean. So much so that I went on and actually did a bit of a research project on that exact topic, because I was so fascinated by some earlier research that said that people weren't really that good at it. But that particular study looked at students. And I thought, yeah, but what about people who are actually the owners of those particular cats that produce the meows? Surely they know what those meows mean, because I'm pretty sure I know what my cat's meows mean. Well, it turns out I actually really was not very good at it at all. I was in that 40%. There's lots of reasons for that, and we definitely need to explore it a bit further. But cats meow at people lots and lots. They don't meow at each other very much past kittenhood. The meow has really been shaped by us. It's a tool to communicate with us. But when we hear the meow, we are often looking at our cat. It orientates our behavior towards our cat. So not only are we listening to it, we're looking at what they're doing, the context that they're in, if they're at the back door waiting to go out, or if they're looking up to the fridge where the cat food's next to it. So we get that information about the context as well. And we also can tell stuff from their body language and their behavior. And we put all those things together along with the sound of the meow to say, oh, he wants to go outside. Oh, he's on the wrong side of the door. Oh, he wants his food. He wants a treat. Those kind of things. When we just listen to the meow in isolation, with no other information, we're really not that good at it. And the reason for that is because cats don't tend to have set meows for set things. They are very, very different between cats, and they may differ also over time. We don't know for certain that they stay the same, and that's because we reinforce them. So if a cat meows to be let outside, for example, and we don't let it outside, it may meow a bit louder or a bit longer or a slightly different pitch, and therefore it can change and evolve, because if we then let it outside, the cat goes, ah, that was a meow that worked that let me outside. I'll try that one next time. So I'd like to think that it's not anything to do with our cat behavior expertise, that we're not good at understanding our beautiful companions. It's much more so that it is an evolving thing. It's changing all the time, and it's different for different cats.
That's super fascinating. It's almost like, so every cat has their own language in a way that they've learned with their specific owner. And that's something I've never thought about before.
Definitely.
So what's the difference then between a meow and a yowl?
Oh, that's a good one. So a meow is, as we've talked about, a really, really diverse vocalization. You know, it can be anything from a little, I'm going to give you some meows now for you, but it can be anything from a little meow to a meow. You know, we can have really different meows, and it can be used in lots of different scenarios. When the cat wants attention, when it's frustrated, when it wants food, lots and lots of different things. The yowl is much more specific. It's used for certain purposes. So for example, in cats that are sexually intact and reproductively active, they will use that yowl sound, which often wakes people up at night when they're looking for a mate, when they're looking to reproduce. And we also hear it in those sort of standoffs between cats, those territorial disputes where they're not happy that another cat's on their patch.
What other behaviours, in addition to the meows and the yowls, do cats do to show us how they're feeling? What behaviours should I look out for if I want to better understand my cat?
There are so many, and we could probably talk about them for a week nonstop. But to give you some top tips and things that I think are quite easy to look out for, and some of the things that we have some sort of robust science behind, so we know that these changes in behavior and posture really mean what we think they mean. The first is something called the tail up signal. And it's that beautiful tail that pops up, often with a soft curled tip at the top, almost like a question mark. And we see cats do that when we call them and they want to come towards us, and they may also use a little burp, sort of what we call a chirrup or purp sound. That tail up signal has been investigated scientifically, and it's been shown that it occurs when a cat has got friendly intentions. So if you invite a cat to come over to you, to interact with you, and we should always invite them, we shouldn't tell them, you know, they should always feel in control. If you see that lovely tail up and that question mark shape, then that's usually a good sign from a distance that that cat is comfortable with your presence and is keen to interact with you, and you can carry on with that interaction. If it makes that chirrup sound, you can always mimic it and do it back. When they get a bit closer to you and you can see their face a bit better, they do another lovely thing that's been coined by some as the cat kiss. And that's that lovely slow blink that they do, where they close their eyes, sometimes fully, sometimes just, we call it a half blink, not fully closed. And if you do that to your cat, they are more likely to do it back to you. And that's another sign of friendly interactions. So that's something definitely to look out for and to do. Cats don't like being stared at directly. So the cat kiss and the tail up are on the positive side. We're doing well if we get those.
Can I also say I'm very glad you're the one demonstrating the noises? Before I recorded this episode today, I was thinking, gosh, do I have to practice my meows and my yowls and my purrs in order to demonstrate them today? So thank you for taking that over.
You're very welcome. I've become well-versed in feline vocalizations.
And what does it mean then when cats do some of the other strange behaviors that we see them do? For example, we've all seen the memes and the videos on social media of cats pushing things off of the table. Why do they do that?
That's a really good question. Why do they push things off the table? I'm not sure I have the full answer. I'm going to be really honest. Cats are incredibly curious by nature. They do a lot of trial and error learning. Often, if we think about their predatory behavior, you know, they've evolved from these solitary hunters that absolutely require meat. They're obligate carnivores. They have to have meat to survive. So hunting is so intrinsic to them, even if they're fed, you know, by cat food by us now. A lot of that behavior comes from following something that moves. You know, something that moves, something that stops, stays still, something that moves again. And they have to follow it acutely to keep their eye on the kill, so to speak. So it's a behavior we often see when they bring prey home. They'll often give it a pat to see, is it fully dead or is it off again? So I have a hypothesis. It's not been scientifically tested, but a bit of that patting behavior or knocking things off is seeing what will happen. Is it alive? Is it going to move? Can I chase it? Or is it just some inanimate object that's a bit boring for me? But the other thing we should also consider is that when the cats do it, it may be a glass of water, it may be our important work papers, or it may be one of our prized ornaments. We're going to react because we don't want a mess in our home. And that reaction can often reinforce that behavior. Even if we think we're saying to them, oh, don't do that. I told you not to do that. And you pick them up. If that cat wants the social interaction, you've reinforced that behavior. So it's they're perhaps learning to control us as well through that kind of thing. Certainly in my mother's house, all our ornaments are blue tacked to the mantelpiece.
That's amazing. How to prepare your house for a cat. Stick everything onto the surface it's on.
Particularly your prized possessions.
It's similar to dogs in a way, actually. If your dog does a behavior you don't want it to do, bark at another dog, for example, often you'll see an owner pick up the dog and it becomes a self-perpetuating process, doesn't it?
Completely.
It's fascinating to think that cats are also the same.
Definitely. And I think owners often think that if they've told the cat off for doing it, then that's not attention. But the cat doesn't necessarily understand the words. So if you just picked the cat up or you said, you know, oh, Tabby, I wish you hadn't done that, the cat's not necessarily deciphering the meaning that you have. So sometimes attention can be positive, even when you intend it to be negative.
So in a way, you can train a cat then to know what you want it to do and what you don't want it to do.
Yeah, you absolutely can train a cat. You know, they have a mammalian brain. We have this concept that dogs are really trainable, but cats aren't. But they both share a mammalian brain. They both respond to pleasant things and negative things, and pleasant things will reinforce behavior and unpleasant things will thwart behavior. The difference, I think, in terms of when we think about training cats is you potentially could train a cat to do anything, but only within the limits of what it's physically and cognitively able to do. But then also we've got to think about, is it meaningful for that cat? If it's not meaningful for that cat, then it may take an incredibly long time to train that cat because it's not intrinsically rewarding or natural for that cat. So I think it's very much about focusing on not just can I train the cat, but what do I need to train the cat? And is the cat going to benefit from that? Is our relationship, our partnership going to benefit rather than let's train that because it's fun and amusing for me?
That makes a lot of sense. So what are some things you would suggest then to a new cat owner, perhaps, that they might try to train their cat to do? What are some meaningful things that an owner can try training their cat to do?
Sure. Well, I think one of the first things that's so important is thinking about the physical health of the cat. So that cat is going to have to visit the vet at some point in its life, regularly, one hopes, for preventative healthcare, for vaccinations. And there will always be reactive times as well, where the cat's unwell or injured, etc. For so many cats, they do not get the veterinary treatment that they need because it is so difficult for the owners to get the cats to the vets going in that cat carrier. And that's because we haven't trained the cat to feel comfortable and secure, not only in the carrier, but also traveling in the carrier. So for me, that's an absolute key skill. It's a life skill that every pet cat needs to learn because it's optimum to their overall physical health as well as their well-being. And there may be other reasons that they need to go in the carrier as well. Some owners use boarding catteries, or they take their cats with them if they're staying in holiday accommodation or they're moving house, for example. So that for me is one of the first key skills. The second things that are really important, I think, also stem around the care of the cat. So being able to do basic health checks. And this isn't in a way that's like, okay, Tabby, it's 6 p.m. on a Tuesday and this is the time that we do your health check, get ready for it. But it's about them feeling comfortable with having their ears checked while they're being stroked on an evening, if they're sat on your lap while you're watching telly, or, you know, you just do a quick check of their teeth or their eyes. You have a look through their fur to check there's no parasites. It doesn't have to be a dedicated health check, but they're comfortable with those kinds of interactions that we intersperse with our normal interactions with them. For many cats, they're not trained that those things can be enjoyable, and therefore it's even harder for the owner and the vet to do them when they're needed.
That's always the hardest thing with a pet, isn't it? Teaching it to essentially endure something that it really doesn't want to be enduring, but that it has to for its own health or for its own good. So how would you help a cat owner then who is struggling to, for example, train their cat to not mind going in the carrier? What kind of things can they do?
So the first thing to do is to really break down all the different behaviours that need to occur for that big end goal to happen. Where people often fail or get so far and then give up is because they've tried to do too much too soon. They've asked too much of the cat and they've lost the training. So what we need to do is think about, okay, what are all the things that needs to happen and how can we break them down into really small, manageable chunks? A bit like if we're revising for an exam or something, we don't tackle the whole thing at once. We make ourselves a revision plan and think, okay, today we're just going to focus on this. So with the cat carrier, the first thing we can do is we can break it right down in terms of physically break it right down. We can take the lid and the door off it. So it's much less of an enclosed space. It's much easier to get in and out of because there's not just one entry or exit point. And we can put that in the home and we can associate it with really nice things. We can make it as positive and appealing as possible. So they don't need to endure being in there. They can actually enjoy being in there. So you can fill it with treats, you can feed the cat in there, you can use synthetic pheromones, which help the cat feel more secure in the environment, you can put their familiar bedding in there, which already smells of them, and you can position it in a place in the home that the cat enjoys being, perhaps on a windowsill or near a radiator, depending on the individual cat's preferences. That's the first step because you've got them comfortable with going in that base of the carrier and using it in the home. Then from there, we start to build up the same principles, but with the lid on. And again, the same principles with the lid on and the door on, but the door open. And then building up to the door momentarily closing, but the cat always feeling comfortable from within and building up then to durations of time. Then, of course, you have to go on to the stage of the carrier moving. That's often where people stop. People think, my cat, he loves the carrier. Now he's brilliant. He'll lie in there all night on an evening, but it's never moved. And the minute they shut the door and pick the cat up, all that good work's been undone because they've now got to endure being in it for 30 minutes on a trip to the vet. And it's really unstable and there's all this movement occurring. So the next step is then building in again, step by step, all the sensory process that come through traveling in the cat carrier to a new place.
Yes, that's not something necessarily you'd think about, really. You think, oh, he likes being in the carrier, but being in a non-moving carrier and being in a moving carrier to a cat is obviously something very, very different.
Very different. And I think if the only events that a cat does in its cat carrier are negative, that the cat doesn't enjoy, that it feels a bit of conflict or discomfort or even pain with, then it's never going to enjoy being in the cat carrier. So we have to make sure it has many more positive experiences than negative to help overcome those inevitable negative experiences when they happen.
And what's the one thing that you wish every cat owner knew about their cat? What do you think is the most misunderstood thing about pet cats?
Oh my goodness. There's so many. But I think the first and foremost, I think for me, the one I see so much when we're thinking about pet cats is that when a cat invites an interaction or is comfortable with an interaction with you, it does not mean that it wants that interaction to last a long time. So very, very often we see owners who say, well, he wanted a fuss and he wanted a stroke and I gave him one and then he turned around and he swiped me. Well, that wasn't very kind. Cats are much more fleeting interactors than humans. As social mammals, people are, we like physical contact. We like physical contact to last a long time. We like to hug. We like to kiss. We like to sit next to one another on the sofa with our bodies touching. We share beds with our intimate partners. But for cats, their interactions, even with the individuals that they're very, very fond of and have strong positive relationships with, are quite fleeting. If you watch them, they'll come up to one another. They might come nose to nose and have a few sniffs. If they're very good friends, they might potentially rub their faces or even their backs along one another, and then they'll be off again. They may rest together. They may be touching together when they rest. But when they come to interactions that are involving petting and stroking, they're much more fleeting. They're much frequent and less duration. And I think as humans, we struggle with that. Because they're so soft, they purr, we are so drawn to them that we want that interaction to last longer and longer, and we miss the subtle signs that the cat's not enjoying it. So less is definitely more when it comes to cats.
So it's almost like Cats are all introverts then, in a way. They're the introvert at the party. They want to go to the party, but they also want to be able to leave when they want to.
Yeah, they are absolutely ultimate control freaks. So if they go to that party, they want to be able to see a clock. They want to be able to see, you know, the wine bar and where the drinks and the nibbles are. They want to be able to see the doorbell camera so they know who's coming and who's going. But they want to be there. But as you say, they want to be in control at all times so that they can act on decisions quickly.
And there's also this belief that cats don't really need us humans. You know, you speak to cat owners and they often say, oh, my cat just comes and goes. He doesn't need me. I put the food down and then I might see him once a day. Is this true? What do cats need from their human owners?
That's a really good question. And I think there's two parts to me answering that, actually. The first part is not every cat is the same. Cats are really individual and diverse, and they sit upon a spectrum where there are some that are very needy of their owners and thrive on social interaction and being with their owner and may even follow their owner from room to room, right the way through to those that may go out that cat flap and never come back and can hunt from themselves and are quite happily living without human intervention. So they're very, very diverse. So it's very difficult to compare them or talk about them as a whole of their social needs, because their social needs are really different. And that depends very much on their genetics, their parents, and that early stage of kittenhood from about 2 to 8 weeks where they are most receptive to being socialized to people. If we take that aside, if we take aside the sort of social flexibility of the cats, there are some very, very basic needs that all cats require that humans can provide in the home. And we call these their environmental needs. And these are, they need their key resources. So things like food, water, a place to sleep, a place to scratch and facial rub, opportunity for predatory behavior, things like puzzle feeding and toys. They need the opportunity for choice and control. And they need the opportunity to maintain their sense of smell within the home. So we're incredibly visual and incredibly verbal. And that's how we navigate our world. We look at one another. We talk to one another. Smell comes a bit lower down for us. But for cats, their sense of smell is incredibly acute. And they use it in recognition of each other and of their home, their familiar territory. And so we can disrupt that a lot in the home by washing the home all the time, cleaning the home, using strong smelling detergents. But their basic need, a real requirement from us, is that there is that stability in scent so that they feel safe and secure. So really to answer, there's environmental things that we can provide that they may not be able to get, particularly in some of the environments that they exist in now. They need shelter, they need warmth, they need a safe place, they need to feel in control, they need somewhere to toilet. And particularly for those cats that live in urban environments, with many of us having concrete yards or paved gardens, we're taking away the opportunity to toilet outdoors. It's no wonder that cats toilet in, you know, other people's flower beds or vegetable beds, because we don't make that provision for cats outside. And therefore, it's really important that we do provide, I believe every cat should have a litter tray in the home, at least one, even if it toilets outdoors, because there's not always that opportunity. So we need to be able to provide for their behavioural needs as much as respecting their social needs.
This has been absolutely fascinating. Before we finish, and it's been an incredible conversation, what are some practical tips then for a cat owner who's listened to this episode and really wants to do the best thing for their cat? I want to go out and buy this, or I want to bring this into the home. What are some things that every cat owner can do today to make sure their cat is living its best life?
Okay, great. Well, I think following on the theme, the first thing that an owner can do is the respect, basically, is start to look at your cat, watch it, observe it before you interact with it. Allow it to choose when it wants to do the interactions rather than you choosing and putting yourself upon the cat. The cat will respect you so much more for that, and you will actually get a better quality of relationship. In terms of resources in the home, make sure your cat has somewhere to scratch. Don't tell it off for scratching the furniture. And we need to have scratching places that are tall, sturdy, and secure. So the cat needs to be stretched out fully. It needs to be able to stand on its back legs and stretch out fully. So a tall scratching place. Make sure it has somewhere to toilet. Make sure it's regularly clean. Make sure it has its food and opportunity for predatory behavior through play and puzzle feeding. Make sure it has water. And it's often a good idea to keep the water and the food apart because the food can contaminate the water if it gets in the water bowl. And make sure the cat has places to get up high. We tend to fill our shelves and the top of our wardrobes with our suitcases and our books and all our stuff. But the cat lives in a 3D vertical world, much more than us. We keep our feet firmly on the ground. So just go through your home. Take a wee bit of time to think, do I really need to have all my bookshelves full of books? Could I leave some spaces for my cat? Could I take off some of the things on top of my wardrobe and put a shelf next to that so my cat could jump up there? Really start to think about how you could give your cat a bit more space.
Thank you so much, Sarah. This has been amazing and I'm sure incredibly useful to all of the cat owners listening. It's almost made me want to go out and get a cat. I've never identified as a cat person, but I have a lot more respect for cats now that I've listened to all of your insights. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
This has been The Pet Perspective by Napo Pet Insurance. You can find more things that your pet would want you to know at napo.pet.